Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience in Mississippi at WYED 94.1 FM and WYEDonline.com. We're glad that you all could be with us. Also, those tuning in through our various affiliates around the world, we're glad that you all could join us as well. If you're looking for a book as we're finishing up this month and heading into a new one that not only will challenge you to be able to realize what you can achieve, but also the impact you could make, I think our next guest has just a book for you. We're excited to welcome Catherine Bertine to our program. Her new book is called Stand, a memoir of activism, a manual for progress, what really happens when we stand on the front lines of change. We'll talk to Catherine not only about the reflections of her own life and what she's been able to do, but also what she's been able to encourage other people to realize they can do as well, and how all of us can be able to stand in our own unique ways. If you are just now finding out about the book, of course, we'll let you know how to get your own copy of it. But Catherine, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Cyrus, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be part of your program.
Well, look, the pleasure is definitely all mine. And when I was prepping for this after I'd read the book, of course, I've been catching up on other conversations you've been having, for one, because I didn't want to ask you the same questions as everyone else, Catherine. But I want to talk about this experience for you. And there's so many, as I said to you before we began the segment, there's so much in this book that I think people, no matter what aspect of their life, will be able to take something from. What has that been like for you, Catherine? Because you did have something that you wanted to share, but what has it been like for you to see the many lessons that people have been gleaning from the book?
What a great question. I have to say that, you know, since the book has only been out for a few weeks now, this is actually the time where people are starting to write in or share, like, oh, hey, I got something from this, or I didn't know that other people felt this way too. And what's really resonating right now with me is that people are connecting, I think, to the authenticity and the vulnerability of being really open about the stuff that happens behind the scenes when we stand up and fight for change. That seems to be drawing on people's heartstrings a little bit more, because it's not an easy journey. And rather than me taking the line of saying, oh, yes, just fight for change and everything will be great, you know, I actually got into the nitty-gritty of what's really hard about that path. And people seem to appreciate the honesty of that level.
And that honesty, I think, comes out in so many different ways. As you are talking about your own experiences in the book, Catherine, in chapter 21, Team Camp and Water Buffalo Horns, you know, when I got to that chapter, I heard that Whitney Houston song in my head, I Didn't Know My Own Strength. And you actually write this in that chapter, as you call pain a complicated journey. You go on to say this: I absorbed the unkind, mean, painful things, both physically and mentally, and lied to myself it was all for the best in the long run. In the short run, there were more lessons and more pain on the way. People will get to that chapter, Catherine, and wonder how you did not do, as your husband even asked, you know, how can you not say something, or, you know, what are you going to do? How did you get to a place where you realized you were not going to allow other people to keep you from a goal or a dream?
Such a great question. I think that, you know, there was part of my brain that thought very much like an athlete will think, and in terms of like, oh, just take it. You can take this. You're strong. Just muddle through. You've got this, and just keep playing. But where the other side of the equation came into effect is the fact that I'm really human. And after a while, it just, you know, to always encounter this type of opposition. And I think finally what flipped the switch for me was to be able to say, okay, you know, this journey of activism isn't easy in any regard, and I need some help getting through it. I need not just to surround myself with people who will be supportive and kind, but to also, you know, take some breaks. I talk a little bit about in Stand how important it is that no matter how passionate we are about pushing for change, it's so important that we take breaks so that we can rest from the intensity of activism. So I think I got to that point where that was what was most important to me, to look for support in others and remind myself that life is a multifaceted journey, and not let this become overwhelming to me.
We hear so much, Catherine, in life about an us versus them, and that can be broken down in many different ways, men against women, races, division. But people will read this book and say a lot of your challenges, a lot of the pushback, a lot of the difficulty, came from individuals that should have been happy for you, rooting for you, other women. Mm-hmm. What has that part of the message been like for you to talk about the fact that, unfortunately, even though we would love the fact that all women are going to be supportive, that all, individuals who are doing what you're doing are going to root for you, that unfortunately that's not going to case, and why you have to be strong enough to stand even against that?
Cyrus, that was probably the most eye-opening part of this journey for me. I was fighting for women's inclusion, for equal opportunities for women. So yeah. I made the assumption that all women would be on my side, who wouldn't
right.
want equal opportunity? And I was absolutely surprised is such an understatement. I was gobsmacked that so many women felt either threatened by this proposal that men and women should have equal opportunity to things, or maybe perhaps even that these women felt that I somehow, just threatened their stance on life. And it was so difficult for me when women that I looked up to stood in my way, one being a team director, the other being my then boss at ESPN. Neither of them really, I think, gelled with this idea. And it was very, very difficult professionally, but also very much personally, like to be kind of smacked down by women that you look up to. So the way that I dealt with it was honestly paying attention to my gut. I knew it was the right thing to do to push on for women's equal inclusion. And I tried as hard as I could to focus on all the other women that stood with me. Some of them very vocal about it, and others, there are some women who really would reach out very privately saying like, hey, I'm behind you. I'm so happy with what you're doing, but I might not be able to share that social platforms because it could affect my job or, my standing in some way. And I said, I get it. I understand. And, thank you for your support. So I tried as hard as I could to focus on those who were with me rather than those who were against me.
And one of those women who were definitely with you is Chrissy Wellington. We're going to talk about her in two different aspects of the book. Catherine, but before we do that, you just said something that piqued my attention, and it made me want to ask you this question. It surprises me as a black man who grew up in Mississippi, who has not had to deal with overt racism or have an incident in my life with police or incidents like that that I can look at and say, this happened to me and this is what I feel. I think it's so interesting in hearing you talk about what you just said is that there are people who go through things, and because of what people may say or because of the way it may be perceived, they don't speak up. Does it surprise you that we're still in that place in 2021 now with all of the different advancements that have been made in so many different ways, that there are people still afraid of being tweeted at, people that are still afraid of being talked about, and that stops them from doing something they know they should do?
It absolutely surprises me, and yet at the same time I can understand, because I'm sure that we have both seen the vitriol that can come forth on social media when somebody stands up for what they believe, and it's amazing what the trolls will do. And even if they are inconsequential people in the grand scheme of things, that stuff still hurts. It's human to human. Being mean is just an awful thing that still happens. And I truly feel for anybody that is, I try to look at it that anybody who's that mean and awful to another person on social media, you know, they're dealing with their own demons and their own ghosts.
Yeah.
And that's the only way, the only saving grace that I can look at it, because otherwise it's just so darn hurtful all the time. And, you know, and I love what you bring up too. It gives me so much hope that maybe our connective thread between all of us, regardless of race, creed, color, everything, you know, we're all so very human, and it hurts when people act out against what we think is for the general good of everyone, right? So, you know, when you say these wonderful words, Cyrus, it makes me have hope that, you know, the more we talk about it, the more we can break down those barriers. And, you know, that's, to me, that makes me happy, especially when, you know, Stan, even though I talk about women's rights and cycling, it's my hope that this book goes far beyond that and, you know, reaches people that, you know, maybe aren't interested in either of those issues, but maybe the connective thread really is the vulnerability that we do share.
I so agree with. In fact, I said that in my review. I really believe that. After reading the book, I said, you know, this, it's so interesting how this is such a broader message. We'll get into that. I want to say, for those who are just tuning in, though, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome Catherine Bertin to our program. She's the author of the new book. Her fourth book, it's called Stand, a memoir on activism, a manual for progress, what really happens when we stand on the front lines of change. Now, there are so many things you have been able to do, Catherine. I mentioned, of course, being an athlete. I mentioned, you know, now, of course, this being your fourth book. You also are a filmmaker, and that comes up, and that's going to come up in what I want to talk to you about when it came to Chrissy Wellington. Talk to us about that. What was it like for you to have someone that you were able to, as you were talking earlier, make a connection with, someone who understood what it was like to go through things and to be able to have those moments where you even talked about being able to laugh at the concept of perfection and find solace in one another's authenticity. What was it like for you to find someone who got you and who understood?
Oh, first, let me just, in case you can't hear it in my voice, I'm sitting here smiling, thinking about this this question and this answer. Chrissy Wellington, for those who might not know, she is a four-time Ironman triathlon world champion. She had a tremendous career, and she actually, not just being an amazing athlete, but the fact that she really broke some serious gender stereotypes and gender boundaries and did an amazing, amazing job in showing women what they can do in the sport and beyond. So, you know, as an athlete and a journalist, this is a woman that I idolized for her physical prowess as well as just everything that she stood for. And when I got the chance to interview her once as a journalist, we ended up bonding as friends, as human beings. And I had no idea that somebody, you know, that I was interviewing for an assignment would go on to play such a tremendous role in activism, you know, for women's pro cycling. So this all took place back in, I think the first time I spoke with Chrissy was in 2011, but by 2013, we had banded together with two other world-class Olympians, Marianne Vos and Emma Pooley of the Netherlands and Great Britain, respectively, and then Chrissy Wellington, also of Great Britain, and we banded together to create change at the Tour de France. And I think what struck me most was the fact that, again, all three women, so people that I idolized as athletes, now are my friends, and we were all on this bandwagon to create change. And it gave me the hope and the perspective that someone like me, who had neither an Olympic medal nor a world championship title, still could play a role in this sphere of activism, and that when we band with the right people, it makes the mission all that stronger. And Chrissy's friendship still to this day, you know, we're close friends. I don't get to see her as often being that she's in England, but it's truly a very bonding experience when we align our paths with others who support and believe in what we do.
And I think there's almost a mirror effect here, Catherine. When I got to that part of the book, and I'm talking about Chapter 20, Roe Camaro, Costa Rica, because there, when you're talking about Chrissy, you say this, watching Chrissy empower and inspire others was awesome. And what I thought to myself by this point is, I'm sure other people thought watching you empower and inspire other people was awesome too. What is that like for you to think of that Catherine, you have been able to do exactly what someone like Chrissy has been able to do, and that is to use your platform to uplift other people.
Oh, thank you. I guess, honestly, maybe I still have a little shyness about this, you know, because I will still always prefer to shine the light on those around me rather than myself. But
yeah.
That said, I really want to shine the light on the fact that we all have the capability to create change by using our individual strengths. You know, so even though my athletic accolades paled in comparison to Chrissy and Emma and Mariana, one of the skills that I had was organization, and I had a decent ability to write proposals and to, you know, put context into words, and I was able to use those strengths within our group. And, you know, you'll notice too, I'm sure you remember this part, Cyrus, where, you know, I call them the stars, but, you know,
yeah.
I was the space dust, but somebody has to drive that space dust bus that carries us all through in activism. And, you know, Chrissy and Emma and Mariana were definitely the stars, but we can all create change. We can all be the bus driver.
And when it came to the other thing I wanted to mention with Chrissy that goes also into your filmmaking with Half the Road, Catherine, is the ask, you know, about being able to say, you know, just ask her to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And, of course, her wanting to do it. You say this in the book about, and again, this is something I think all creatives, again, showing the broad messaging of this book in the chapter Try, 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 chapter 34. You talk about the success after, you know, what other people would look at as the doors being shut. You write this, all jokes aside, there was a bit more underlying my mini cry fest. During the 2 years it took to make Half the Road, I was in relentless go mode, get her done, make it happen, go, go, go. Beneath that layer, something in my sensitive soul never truly got over being called a no one or being undervalued by women to whom I aspired. Until that night in Richmond, when a film originally eliminated was brought back by a woman who saw its importance and then went on to win the Audience Choice Award. That was healing juju, is what you wrote. I mean, is that also what you want people to take away from this book? Again, yes, the bigger message is about the activism and being able to stand up. But really, as I said to you before we began the segment, Catherine, the importance of standing up for yourself and believing in yourself.
I have to say that, and this is highlighted in the passage that you just read, Cyrus, that for all of those people out there that are trying to take us down or knock us off our block, there are people out there who will bolster us and hold us up. And every time we run into the former, we have to remember that the latter is out there and to not give up, to keep trying. And I know that when we align with, you know, what our gut believes is really true, that we will find the right people to, you know, who stand with us. And that's
yeah.
really a huge part of why Stand, you know, is the name of this book. And, I, you know, so that people know that even when, you know, the chips are down or people are against us, just keep standing for what you believe, and the right people will come into your circle if you let them and if you keep trying and if you seek them out. And it won't always be the people you think of or, you know, or expect. Sometimes it's
right.
total strangers, but the doors that they open and the support that they give is unlike anything I truly ever imagined until, you know, I took this journey.
And I think knowing that people are watching, I have had to learn that in my own journey, Catherine, and you saw that even with Tom that we meet in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned him before we began the segment, and how that belief and that, you know, basically that permission. Talk to us about that, because I think, again, for so many people, especially today, that permission to be who you were meant to be, to do what you were meant to do, what was it like to have mm-hmm. it validated?
I love this question. Okay, so Tom is my business partner at Homestretch Foundation, the nonprofit that we founded to fight the gender pay gap in professional sports, right? So when I was first, you know, stepping into this realm of this particular role of activism, I was looking for somebody who might join forces, you know, somebody who could be a donor and an investor in this vision. And Tom Bailey, he stepped forth into this role. And I later asked him, you know, I said, what made you really, truly believe that a home stretch was something that was worth it? And honestly, like, what made you follow my, you know, my path for all these years? And I'll never forget his answer was, he's like, well, you turned left. And that was really interesting and really exciting to watch your journey. And what he meant by turning left, I asked him to explain that. And he said, well, look, I had kind of the typical American path. I grew up, I went to college, I got a job, I started a family. And, you know, for me, those were all very typical steps. And here you were in your career and your choices and your journey. And you took an entirely different turn than so many people that I know. And I wanted to see what happened. And then eventually I wanted to be part of that vision to make this world a better place so that men and women would have equal opportunity. And that floored me. And it still does to this day. That was a stranger who was following my journey online and during my days at ESPN. And it really, really made such an impact. Again, not just on me, but the fact that Homestretch Foundation has now helped 70 athletes from 17 different countries. And Tom is very humble. He'll be like, no, I didn't do anything. And I'm like, yes, you did.
Right.
You sure did, you know. And that was the journey of sometimes the people that will stand with us. We don't know they're out there. So keep doing your thing and, you know, shining the light on how this change can truly help more people than, you know, than just yourself, but the bigger picture.
Yeah. And Catherine, that's why I saved Tom for last, because again, it to me, it comes full circle with how we began this conversation about this is so much bigger than sports. It's so much bigger than one thing. In the chapter 46, Learning to Trust, Learning to Lose, in talking about that conversation, you write this, and I love this, you know, about his response, because I have a daughter and a son, I can't live in a world where they're valued differently. And then you added, his teenagers weren't cyclists, but the bigger picture of Homestretch was not lost on him. If we created a platform to assist women and lobby for salary equity, then other parts of society could follow our format and do the same. And that to me says so much about you, about your mission, about who you are and what you want to do. So I guess my question would be to you, is that your help, your hope, when people finish the book, that they're able to realize not only what is in their power to do, but really what is their responsibility to do?
Oh, Cyrus, yes, that is my biggest hope with STAND, is that people will take that message that Tom stands for, you know, and people will apply this ability to create change in any area where they're particularly drawn to an inequity that's happening, you know. And especially people that might not have anything to do with cycling or women's inclusion. There are still so many branches on this tree of equality that need to be covered, right? And anybody who will go out there and know that they have this power to create change and they can align with others, that is really my biggest hope, is that people know that we all have this power. And I also like to tell people, look, if you're not comfortable being on the front lines, there are so many ways that you can affect change from the back lines. You know, you can still be in the troop, but you can do anything from the organizational side to the, you know, anything from raising money to actually advocating live and in person. That's a huge chasm of you know, change or different roles that are in there. And as long as we know that we can find our strengths by doing what rings true most to us, there is a place where we can put our level of activism that we're most comfortable with. And I hope people will take that as a nugget when they're done with STAND.
Yeah, I think they will. Again, everyone, Catherine Bertin has been our guest. Great conversation with you, Catherine. The book, again, is STAND, A Memoir on Activism, A Manual for Progress, What Really Happens When We Stand on the Front Lines of Change. It's available through our friends at Amazon.com. You all can get it there or, of course, have it ordered through your favorite bookstore. Catherine, how can our audience stay connected with you?
Oh, I would love it if they would head over to CatherineBertin.com And I've got a mailing list where I will keep people posted on what's coming next in terms of the, you know, books or the creative pipeline. And people can reach me through my website as well. So I know you'll have this somewhere on the site, Cyrus, but it's KathryneBertine.com. And I'm on social media by that exact same handle, Catherine Bertine. So I hope that we will stay connected.
Looking forward to it. Catherine, congratulations to you again. Really appreciate this. And it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime.
Thank you, Cyrus. Thank you for all you do.
Hey, my pleasure. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. I want to thank our good friends at PR by the Book for setting up this chat with us for today as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Today, amazing. Take care.